Welcome back, everyone, to the this week's episode of the Electric Podcast, which is actually sponsored this week by Wonder Capital, the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. With Wonder, you can help finance renewable energy projects while earning up to 7.5% return annually. To learn more, visit wondercapital.com/electric. How are you doing, Seth, today?
I'm well, thanks.
Great. Big week this week, huge week.
Really big week.
Yeah, at least for me. I think I broke my records of an article this week, and like I'm over 40 already.
And I think the site has hit a record again as well.
Yeah, EVs and renewable energy is as popular as ever, and that's keeping us busy.
I even did a couple articles this week.
Yeah, you did a few this week. And yeah, so if we we've seemed tired this week, you know why. We're trying to keep the level of energy a little bit up, but we'll do our best. So first thing that was very important in the news this week, at least when it comes to Tesla, was a big Autopilot update. So if you've been following us in the past few weeks, almost a month ago, we reported on an exclusive report of Tesla pushing a new update in the beta fleet. So the beta fleet's been mostly unused for close to a year, I think, until that point. But it's a group of early access owners that have the program was first called early access. Now I think it's called just beta tester. But they have access to early build that are not pushed wide to the fleet. So when we're talking about a few hundred owners or so, and they were testing a new update that was powered by a brand new neural net developed by Tesla's vision team, led by the new director of artificial intelligence at Tesla, Andrey Kuperty. And I think that's how you pronounce his name, but either way, he's a neural net expert. So he built, with his team, of course, a brand new neural net system that Tesla tested, like I said, on the battlefield last month, and this week started to push to the wider fleet. So right now, if you have the update 2018.10.4, your Autopilot system is powered by this new neural net. And the neural net is a lot more heavier. I have a source that said it was 100 megs bigger than the, so about 10%, something like that, bigger than the original one. A new one for the main cameras, and now they are using the repeater cameras on the side too, the one that are in the fenders. They sort of look back a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, they're using a lot more cameras, and the cameras are using a new neural net to just try to figure out what are they looking at, which is kind of a big deal if you're trying to power the car, to drive a car. And in terms of actual performance, unanimously people are saying that there's a big difference.
Yeah, almost universally everybody I've seen so far. And what's frustrating is I haven't got it yet. I've got Autopilot 2, and I'm just like kind of hitting refresh on that. I might drive by the Tesla service center, get on their Wi-Fi, and try to hit the refresh, because that's how bad I want it.
It helps if you're on the Wi-Fi at home to get it. If not, some people have reported that if you go connect to the Wi-Fi to your local service center, sometimes it will automatically push the update. Though it's not like 100% confirmed, it's like, but there's enough anecdotal evidence that it looks like it could be the case. But the update is sprinting pretty fast this week, so normally it can be kind of slow at first, but we started seeing, I think, on Wednesday night, the others started pushing, and by this morning, I think most people are... I mean, it's only Autopilot 2.0, 2.5, nothing for Autopilot first generation, which has been pretty much like limited for a while now since Autopilot 2.0 went out. Might still improve on its own, like... with more data coming in, but there's no like new feature coming or anything like that. And so auto steer, of course, is the big difference. People are seeing a lot less ping-ponging between the lanes. The vehicles also, when you look at your instrument cluster, you can see when the vehicle detects the lane, and most people see a big difference right now. Tesla just detects the lane a lot quicker, which means that you can also activate auto steer a lot quicker. So auto steer doesn't appear available all the time, and it appears when Autopilot system can detect the line on the road, either on the side or a middle lane. But right now it's going a lot quicker. Some people are also seeing a difference with the traffic over cruise control. If you're locked into a car in front, autopilot 1 was often seen as more effective in terms of slowing down with a lead car to slow the speed and come to a full stop. Now, most people I've talked to said that with the new update, Autopilot 2.0 is just as good as the first generation when it comes to going to a full stop with a lead car, which is a big deal, of course, if you're using it in traffic, which is a big use of the Autopilot system, trying to be more convenient in traffic.
So just a couple things. This is the one that Elon Musk has been talking about for a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And initially, people are... we've seen a bunch of YouTube videos. They're saying it handles much better. So you mentioned the ping-ponging. I'm assuming that's going to kind of, bring Autopilot 2 to Autopilot 1 parity or even surpass it?
I'd say the most positive, because it always depends on how you use Autopilot. So if most people just use it as you should on the highway, which is the recommended use by Tesla to use the system on a highway with a divided between the each way. And at that level, the Autopilot 2 was already pretty good, but like I said, like with the thing with coming to a full stop and things like that weren't already as good, because especially when it come to detecting like an object that is not moving. So again, a car in full traffic when it's at a full stop, that was an issue. So things like that made it so that people weren't ready to call it completely a parity with the Autopilot 2.1. So that update fixed that. But Autopilot 2.1 was already a lot better for like local roads, for example. So since there's more cameras, we're able to more easily detect, even though there's no line, to be able to sort of navigate, even though there's no line. And that got actually better in some aspects with this update, but it was already in many ways better than the first generation Autopilot. So yeah, at this point you could easily say that 2.0 is better than the first generation, I think, overall. And it's going to get a lot better now that you have the new neural net. So with the new neural net, you just keep feeding more data into it, and it gets better over time. So that's the exciting part. So we have the basis right now to be able to experience an even better Autopilot in the future.
Yeah, and it was nice to see Tesla's head of AI and Autopilot retweet our article. Thanks for that.
Yeah, they are looking at the feedback very closely right now. So if you have anything, you can send them. And if you comment on the threads, on the forums, or on the electric article and stuff like that, they look into it and see the reaction and how they can improve. And you can, if you go to the link in the description, you can see the article that we posted this morning with a few video demonstrations. And there's more coming right now. And it gives a few good example of what the current update is capable of. And it looks good. Looks very good. And while we were speaking about not entirely self-driving, of course, the Autopilot is still a driver assist system, but it's going towards self-driving. And GM had a big announcement this week, because they've been saying for a while now that they're ready to mass produce. And mass produce, that's the other word. Fully self-driving vehicle, even completely driverless, without a steering wheel, without any pedal or anything. And they are using that, basing the Chevy Bolt EV, which is fun for us, because big fan of electrification here. So they are combining their self-driving effort with electrification.
As they should, certainly.
And this week, they announced $100 million investment to upgrade the factory where they produce the Bolt, the Orion plant in Michigan. So they produce the thing on the same line, but they have a few different things that they have to add for a redundant system in terms of safety in case something goes wrong. And they're going to upgrade the plant to be able to go to full production with that. And they're also updating a second plant where they're going to build the sensor roof rack that goes on the roof of the Bolt EV that they're calling it the Cruise AV for autonomous vehicle, and Cruise, of course, is the automation company that they bought a few years back to sort of kickstart their autonomous driving effort.
That is an ugly, ugly looking thing that they're putting on top of cars. I hope that they have plans to smooth that out a little bit. I mean, at least for just aerodynamic sake.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, if you go with the Tesla way with the autopilot, Tesla is still looking to sell cars to people, so they still have to look good. And their vision-based system is good for that, because you just have to hide a few cameras on the cars, which isn't as difficult as what we see on the roof of the Chevy Bolt autonomous car, which has five LiDAR sensors, which are already a lot bigger than cameras. And then you have five of them all jacked up on top of a weird-looking rack that looked like a alien saucer or something.
Looks like a Roomba.
But they don't have to sell those cars, though. Yeah, it does look like a Roomba, but they don't have to sell those cars. The aim of their effort when it comes to self-driving is to build an autonomous ride-sharing platform, like a self-driving Uber, if you will.
Right.
So if you have that, you don't have to sell the cars. You don't even have to sell it like a Uber driver who has his own car. Like, there's no driver or anything.
Right, so you just send it out.
Yeah, so the way you experience the car is you sit in it for however long the ride is, and then you get out, and that's it. So you, unless you've been caught dead in it, like, it's not your car.
Right.
So no one cares.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that's going to be an advantage for Tesla. You know, Apple, Google, Cruise, a few other folks are doing the LiDAR. LiDAR is big and ugly. You know, future versions of LiDAR will be integrated into the body of the car, but as it stands now,
Google did it a little bit better. Like, they have, since they work with, well, I can't believe what I was going to say, since they work with Chrysler, so they were able to adapt, implement the sensor more easily, but Chevy is Chevy, so it's their own car. If they want to, they can integrate them more easily, but they're really not doing it. Like, they really putting that on top of the Bolt. But like I said, there's other things that are in the autonomous Bolt that are not in the one that you can buy for $40,000. It's like I said, there's a lot of redundant safety systems in case there's a problem. But what is we can complain about how the car looks and everything, but at the end of the day, you want an autonomous driving system that works and it's safer than an average human driver.
Right, and
several times safer.
Theoretically, these are for cities, so this driving is going to be a lot slower. So you don't need the aerodynamics. It's not as much a high priority as like long haul, you know, highway type speeds.
Well, yeah, they're probably gonna do some highway, but yeah, they're gonna deploy fleet at a specific city first, and move to other cities, like they do now with their current it's not a ride sharing system, but a car sharing system.
The Maven or something?
Maven, yeah. So, going to be a similar deployment. And they say it's coming as soon as next year. So, that's what we want to know. Are they there yet? Are they really safer than human? And can they be deployed in a full commercialized system? That's the big question right now. And GM says yes, and it says it's coming as soon as next year.
So, to put that into perspective, I had to upgrade my Bolt with a USB stick last month, so I'm not sure how realistic next year is.
But like we discussed when you posted that story, it's not as much as a technical issue for them. It's more about like the dealership problem, maybe.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, that could be part of the Cruise problem. Like, you know, these are cars, and all cars have to go through dealerships, don't they? Like, isn't that?
But if they're not selling them to customers, like, do the Maven car have to go to the dealership? Like,
I don't know.
I'm not sure that's going to be a big. Maybe that's the loophole. Maybe that's why a lot of automakers are going that way too, or they're going with the ride hailing system, and not they don't want to sell the autonomous cars like Tesla does or will. Or such a weird way to talk about Tesla, because they claim that they can be already autonomous, so they're come sort of already selling autonomous
cars.
Right,
they're selling the hardware, but the software will come at some point.
Yeah. And that's still... Tesla still say that they're going to do coast-to-coast demonstration in the coming months, so maybe we're going to have a better... Because it's very hard right now to say who's the leader right now in autonomous vehicles. It's extremely hard. There's a bunch of, like,
I would say Google, probably.
Yeah, Waymo has been doing some very impressive stuff, like... But Waymo and Cruise are maybe the most public about what they're doing right now. They're the ones like showing demo rides and everything. Tesla hasn't shown anything in since October,
right?
October 2016. So it's been a long time. So maybe until Tesla shows what they come up with since then. But Tesla's focus has always been right now on what they can push the customer already. So that's been through the autopilot program instead of a full self-driving system. So it's really hard to tell. But I think it's looking good right now. Moving on, we can talk maybe about the Tesla Semi, which also had a big week this week.
Yeah, it delivered some beer to... Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's a Tesla Semi truck right now going around Midwest, and it has beers in its trailer. I think that's a real possibility. Maybe not, but either way, it went to Budweiser, to their brewery in St. Louis.
Maybe it's doing a tour of all the people who put in pre-orders.
That's a real possibility. So it should go to Canada soon, since Canada ordered a few, so maybe,
sure.
Maybe I'm going to get to see it. But so as we reported last week, Tesla Semi, the Bolt prototypes made their first cargo trip from Gigafactory 1 to Fremont. And then just a few days later, that was this week, one of those two prototypes, the gray one, showed up in St. Louis at, Seth's going to say the name.
Anheuser-Busch.
Anheuser-Busch, which is the brewer of Budweiser. We ordered also 40 Tesla Semi electric truck last year after the unveiling. So the truck showed up there, and people were able to take a look around. And you can check on Electrek in the description below. We got a few pictures thanks to an Electrek reader called Brendan Knobloch, I think. Sorry if I mispronounced his last name. Knobloch. His brother Tony sent us a bunch of great picture of a close-up Tesla Semi prototype, and we even got to see the electric motors.
Yeah, that was super cool.
Yeah, very very close-up shot, and because the four electric motors are sit on the rear axles, and we see three of them just well lined up one after the other. It's really cool. And they are apparently the same as the one in the new motors that Tesla designed for the Model 3 with permanent magnet.
So do you think those are direct drives, or is there some sort of change, you know,
some gear?
Yeah, some ratio reduction thing, are those things just spinning the wheels direct?
A good question. I want to see, like, so you don't really need one for traction. Like, in the truck is mainly traction in terms of high speed. If you want to gear it, or like you don't need to achieve a high speed in a truck at all, since they're actually locked at that. What's mm-hmm. the limit in the U.S. For? All I know right. there's a limit. Like, I think in Canada it's 105 kilometer an hour, something like that, and you cannot go faster than that. I'm not sure what it is in the U.S.
It's so probably something similar.
Yeah, so it's 65. Not about speed; it's all about traction and power. So I don't think they would need to have a more complicated transmission system.
Yeah, and it's weird that that was just exposed. Like, is that just how it is? Like, you can just see the motors from looking in, or?
Well, if you look at the different pictures, I think there was a piece missing to it. Or when it doesn't have a trailer, and when Tesla showed the car, like the car, the truck, there was another piece on top of the rear axle, I think. I've never seen it like that, actually. So we'll take a look at the article. It's pretty pretty interesting to see underneath that stuff. But the real interesting part is that the truck showed up in 4 days, like 200 miles from Fremont. So we assume that it drove there. Of course, it could have been carried, but I'm not sure it's the case.
I think they're driving, because we saw a couple pictures via Instagram of the thing at a supercharger, which kind of implies that there's some sort of adapter
So that's the other interesting stuff. So I haven't managed to get pictures yet, but a few people that sent me pictures of the truck at the supercharger, and they said that they couldn't take pictures of that adapter you're talking about because like the people were there and they want to take the pictures of the people, and they just took picture of the truck. But it's still, I think it's still pretty good information. There was multiple cables going into the truck or the powertrain on the side of the truck, and so I would assume that they would be able to plug multiple supercharger through that adapter going into the powertrain of the truck, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know if they would need to do more than one. I mean, they can probably fill up in a few hours at a normal supercharger.
But if you don't want to go quicker.
Yeah, if they want to go quicker, they would have to kind of... I don't even know if the supercharger cables can reach twice around.
That's what I'm saying. They have, like, the adapter is also an extension, sort of.
Okay.
That's how it was described to me. But like I said, I would have liked to have seen a few pictures of it.
Also, it's kind of interesting noting the wheels, the rear wheels, are not the dualies that you kind of normally see on those trucks. They have these really big, fat, treaded tires there. I don't know if... Yeah, I'm not a big semi-expert, but I don't know if that's an efficiency thing or what.
Well, it's a weight thing, too, because normally if you have dual tires, it's going to be heavier.
Right.
So since you also need the wheels underneath, which is the heavy part, of course. So I think it's probably more of a weight thing. And, well, an efficiency thing, too. So if you end up with less contact with the ground, automatically you're going to increase your efficiency.
Right.
I'm not a semi-expert either, so I'm not sure exactly like what's the why not more people do it, because that doesn't change the fact if whether your powertrain is electric or diesel, you can still have efficiency advantages like with the tires and the wheels. But speaking of a semi-expert, we had a few semi-experts. We weren't happy about what they were seeing. They were happy about what they were seeing, but what they were seeing was not what they were thinking. The Tesla Semi was the same prototype since it was going around Missouri after leaving the brewer in St. Louis. It was spotted on the side of the road on the highway, and since it was like in the middle of nowhere on the side of the road, people assumed that it was broken down, which is a fairly reasonable assumption. But some people were too happy about it, especially when it comes to truck drivers. So I didn't know this, that it was a that Tesla Semi was an issue with truck drivers, because I didn't see it coming, especially since Tesla never like made it so that it was a self-driving truck, which I would see the problem then. But it's mainly about going electric with trucks. It's not about self-driving, so I don't see an issue with drivers. But after those sighting of the trucks on the side of the road, we took a look at some of the truck driving forums and social media groups, and people were just all laughing about the prototype, just a prototype broken down on the side of the road. And it went as far as sending insults to Tesla and Elon Musk directly about the truck, and they were they went kind of deep into it, and we talked to Tesla about it, and they said that the vehicle wasn't even broken down on the side of the road. They just, like we said, it's a prototype, it's part of the test program, and they just stop in the road to check a few things, make a few tests, make a few adjustments, and then they went right back on the road. Nothing, like, they didn't need to be towed or anything like that. But it still made a lot of naysayers quite happy about it. And that's the thing. Even if it was broken down, if there was a big issue with it, and you have a problem with Tesla Semi, you shouldn't be happy about that, because that's part of a test program. You're pushing the truck at its very limit, and you see how it reacts and how it performs at those extremes. And if you can break it, then that's actually a good thing, because then you see where it went wrong, and then you can adjust, and the actual final product would be a problem. If your production version, after being launched and being sold to customer, if then it breaks down, that's an issue. But prototype, it's a good thing that it breaks down. So yeah, I wasn't happy about that. I was disappointed by truck drivers. Do you have an idea, Seth, why truck drivers wouldn't be happy about the Tesla Semi coming to market?
Well, I think you know, not everybody's going to have a Tesla Semi, so this is kind of a disruptor. Mm-hmm. And you know, when some, you know, like if Anheuser-Busch has their own fleet of Tesla Semis, then all of a sudden your one semi operation may seem a little bit more in jeopardy. That's a guess. I don't know. I mean, people are just typically averse to change. Like, that's just kind of normal. I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, though, the rear view mirror on the thing looks kind of bent. Did we ever figure out what that was?
The rear mirror?
Oh, yeah, the side mirror. Looks kind of bent on the Tesla Semi.
Let me take a look. No, I didn't realize that. Well, maybe they can move it. Probably they can move it. So
yeah.
That might be just it. Like, he can move it around. But Tesla said it wasn't... I think they just flipped it because they were on the side of the highway.
Oh, yeah,
so if another truck would have swing by, it would have just... could have run into it. So I think it's on purpose. But yeah, so let's even though we have our own doubts about the Tesla Semi, let's at least embrace the idea of someone trying to go electric with freight transport, because it will have a tremendous impact on zero emission, on pollution period, but also if Tesla is right with their cost structure, it's gonna have also a great impact on cost, which is just great for everyone involved. Everyone that buys anything, it's going to be great for them. So, either way, moving on. Electric cars are becoming increasingly greener in the U.S. thanks to a cleaner electric grid. So that's something that we've been pushing for a while now. This idea that, that's the big talking point that EV naysayers are using, that since you're powering your car with coal, sometimes depending where you are in the U.S.,
which is becoming rarer and rarer.
Yeah, it's going down. Your car is actually just as polluting as a gas-powered car, which is completely false to start with, because coal power plants are just much more efficient than an internal combustion engine inside a car. But the grid has also been becoming a lot greener in the U.S., which is making electric cars on the, powered by that grid just increasingly cleaner too. And the Union of Concerned Scientists have been doing a long-going study on that, and every year they publish an update of state-by-state, the average, the level of pollution that's coming from the grid, and then they match that with the efficiency of an electric car, and then they compare it what the average electric car in that state gets in terms of mileage per gallon in comparison to a gas-powered car. And in 2016, so now their latest data for the grid is from 2016, and it gets 80 miles per gallon. So an average electric car in the U.S. gets the equivalent of a gasoline car at 80 miles per gallon, which of course doesn't exist.
Right.
So,
I mean, there's some places like where you theoretically would be doing better with a Prius. Like, it looks like Illinois, southern Illinois, and western Missouri or eastern Missouri are 53 miles per gallon, which is the same as a Prius. Upper Michigan and Wisconsin are 51 miles per gallon. I'm just looking around briefly. The worst place, I guess, is Oahu. On Hawaii, you know, part of Hawaii, which is 31 to 40 miles per gallon.
I think you're not using the right one.
Oh, is that the orange one at the bottom?
The 2016 one is the one on the far right.
Okay.
Hawaii would 35 miles per gallon right now.
Oh, yeah, 35. That's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the point is that there are places, theoretically, that are very close to, like, a Prius. But that's not even including, so this data doesn't even include, like, how does the gas get to the gas station? It goes on a big truck that's spewing out carbon and, you know, diesel pollutants. Like, it takes a lot to refine the oil to get it to the U.S., all this stuff. So even in the worst case scenario, you're still doing better with electric.
Yeah.
So as soon as somebody brings that thing up, just like whip out this page here from the Union of Concerned Scientists, mm-hmm. and like there is no situation where putting gas in your car is better than electric.
Yeah. And then also you just named the worst example, and of course we already mentioned the average, which is looking good. But then you have the places that just are completely off the chart, like of course California, which has an increasingly higher mix of renewable energy in the grid.
Actually,
it's now 109 miles per hour.
Look at upstate New York.
Yeah, upstate New York is looking great at 191 miles gallon.
That's mostly from Hydro-Québec, I believe.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying that Quebec is the best thing. So, like, we are exporting hydroelectricity right now in New York, so that's what's making a difference. But here in Quebec, it's not. I'm not sure what's going to be the equivalent if you look at miles per gallon, but it's 99.9% renewable, just our energy in Quebec. So when you put an electric car on the road, it makes such a big difference. Which is why I don't get why we just don't go all in on electric vehicles in Quebec and in everywhere else where you get that kind of clean grid, like right now in upstate New York. But in Quebec, it's even better than that because we import all our petrol. So there's a technology that exists right now that can make it so that we would stop importing all that petrol and have a big energy deficit and then replace it by an energy that we produce ourselves, and it's completely clean. And on top of that, it's not just a few handful of people that's getting rich of it. The entity producing that energy is state-owned, and therefore it's public good. It's everybody's profit from them selling more electricity. I just don't get it. Like,
we need a carbon tax. That's
yeah.
It always comes, like, you can go all different directions, but it always comes back to, like, mm-hmm. you just need a carbon tax, and everything falls into place.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If you have a carbon tax at the state level, carbon tax will work when everybody gets into it. And Quebec already tried that, and then there was a partnership with California at some point and everything, but it never got off the ground because, like, you can go nationwide with it. So that's why I'm thinking, like, but if you can go directly on at the state level and just encourage the and they do, like, we have a $8,000 incentive at the purchase and everything, but it's like a fraction of what Norway is doing, for example, and Norway is just as big as Quebec, so it's the same thing. They're a little bit richer though.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A lot more Teslas over there, probably.
But they also have a ton of petrol. That's the thing. Like, they can use their own petrol if they want to. But of course, they produce more.
No, they're on the easy don't get high off your own supply regimen.
Yeah, they're trying to get off their own supply, but they still use them. Well, on the other hand, Quebec is just importing everything. So that creates a big deficit. But yeah, it's still encouraging for the fact that the grid is getting cleaner, therefore EVs are getting cleaner, so that's always nice to see. And speaking of getting cleaner in the US, so you want to encourage more electric vehicles on the road, and the way the federal government is doing that right now is with the federal tax credit, the $7,500 that you get when you buy a new electric vehicle. And as we know, that's going away soon for a few manufacturers, since it works with the phase-out period getting implemented after a specific manufacturer hits 200,000 electric vehicle delivered in the U.S. And right now, there's a new effort to try to remove that cap, which was surprising this week. There's a U.S. senator behind the effort, and now it's being backed by electric utilities all around the U.S., which of course, like we just discussed, have an interest into that, into selling more electricity.
Well, why? I mean, they should have been getting into this for a long time. I mean, we're already seeing some, like, you know, the $10,000 deal on off of a BMW i3 and before Nissan Leafs when they're helping get rid of them. But it's you know, like, why aren't these electric utilities, like, really getting behind electric vehicles? They stand so much to gain.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to sell more and more electricity.
Well, there's been a few, but that's really one of the biggest effort we've seen so far. Like, 36 electric utilities all band together to try to get that passed, which I don't see. I mean,
I'm not
the U.S. politic expert, but I cannot give you, like, the odds on a...
Not this administration. I don't see either.
So just a few months ago, the GOP was talking about completely removing the incentive altogether, and now they would extend it. So, but that's the thing. They went with the right argument for the GOP and for Trump. They went with the job argument and the U.S. manufacturing argument, because the argument is good, because that's the thing. The first two companies to hit the threshold are going to be Tesla and GM, the two biggest electric vehicle manufacturers in the U.S. And as soon as they hit the threshold, other companies have a competitive advantage in the EV market over them, because they get that by being the late to market. So Tesla and GM will get a disadvantage because they were first mover and they invested more into EVs than companies, foreign automakers, who took a lot of times to bring EVs to the US market. Then they get an advantage because they were slower. So that's what doesn't make sense. So if you want to keep encouraging the US manufacturers, in this case Tesla and GM, it would make sense to remove that threshold.
And we know you know, from Hong Kong and Denmark, that when you remove the incentive, sales are hit hard.
Yeah.
So it is. I mean, I don't think Tesla's going to have any problems selling Model 3s, but it's still a big deal.
Well, I think sales will skyrocket for a while, though, because that's the other thing. The way the phase-out period is set up is so weird that we've discussed this a few times in the past, so sorry if we become redundant, but the phase-out period, as soon as you hit 200,000, you're okay for the quarter during which you hit the 200,000 mark, and the next quarter after that. So if, for example, Tesla hits it in Q2 this year, so first day of April, for example, then they have the full second quarter, then the full third quarter to still get that $7,500. So you can imagine that that's 6 months we're talking about. Sales will just go crazy for 6 months, because everyone that's thinking about updating their car, going to a new Tesla, or just looking for electric vehicles in general, then that's a big difference for them, because they're going to see that car increasing in value by $7,500 as soon as the... Because that's going to happen.
Well, it drops down to $3,750 and then it drops down again.
Yeah.
But so still, that, but it drops in phases.
Increasingly, yeah. So, but for that full $7,500, it makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So people will probably rush to buy them as soon as it hits.
But
because we don't
Tesla,
know when it hits right
Tesla
now.
Tesla doesn't have any extra Model 3s to sell, though. Like, there's just not any more.
Yeah, but the Model S and X, I think, will sell, too. Like, it's because it applies for all the electric vehicles of a specific manufacturer.
Right.
So maybe for GM, maybe I think if the Volt is still in the lots at that point, people will buy the Volt.
Yeah, the Volts are actually a pretty good deal. I think they're under 30,000 now, and you still get the 7,500.
Yeah. So the Bolt has been crushing the sales of the Volt since it came out. Like, the Volt sales have been going down and down and down. But they're gonna, as soon as they hit the threshold, they're gonna sell every Bolt they can. And there's going to not be enough, I'm pretty sure, unless what we talked last week about GM increasing the production of the Bolt without specifying the actual production rate, unless that's, like, very much higher than we thought, then people will just start buying the Bolt instead, pretty sure. Because the value, we've seen it happen every time any kind of subsidy was removed from the market. every time in Denmark, in Hong Kong, in the Netherlands for a while when it drops. It didn't remove it entirely, but just drop, which is the same thing that's happening actually right now. So it's going to drop in half for a while at least. So that's a fairly good bet. But right now, maybe there's a small, very small chance that it will actually remove the cap.
Yeah, and so you think, and I probably agree with you here, but you think Chevy or GM will hit it before Nissan?
It sounds like it, yeah. So that's the problem. Well, we don't know the production rate exactly. Nissan just started production of the new Leaf in Tennessee last month or a few weeks before that. Mm-hmm. So if the car ends up selling really well and production there's no production constraint, then maybe they could just go crazy and beat both, well, maybe not Tesla, but at least GM to the threshold.
Yeah.
But right now, we don't want to promote that. We don't want to promote that idea because it's a good thing for everyone if they leave that gap. Well, right. not for electric vehicles in general, not everyone. It's not a good thing for Audi. It's not a good thing for Audi and Mercedes are the one that benefits the most from the cap right now because they are the closest competitor for Tesla in terms of luxury electric vehicles, and they've never been to market. Well, they sell a few things in California and whatever, but it's just like a fraction. So they're far away from their 200,000 mark threshold. So they're the one that benefit the most from it. Other than that, like the cap would just benefit everyone in general for the adoption on EV. So
and BMW's not even close with their i3s and their
neither. Whatever. Yeah. Speaking of Model 3, we had a few Model 3 news this week too. A weird one to start with, CNBC reported on. They've been doing that a few times now. They've been reporting. That's not even the right article. Okay, either way, I know it by heart. So, CNBC reported that there was an increasing number of flawed Model 3 parts that was putting a lot of strain on Tesla's production of the Model 3. So we know that Tesla's problem with the production right now, but the way Tesla communicated those problems are mainly related to bottlenecks in the production. So you have a ton of different parts to produce. You have several different production lines. And some of those parts and production lines are restricted in the numbers of in terms of volumes. And it doesn't reach the rest of the lines. So that creates bottleneck that limits the overall production. But CNBC... in a report that came out this week, and the report was based on unnamed previous and current Tesla employees, that's what they said. They instead said that the problems were with Tesla producing the cars with flawed parts and having to ship those parts to service center and remanufacturing facilities to fix the car before they go to the customers. Which at first doesn't sound implausible, but Tesla came down on the report quite strong, saying that it was just completely flawed, and they had a few good points, because in the report, the reporter in question seems to have completely confused Tesla's remanufacturing work with reworking cars. So remanufacturing normally just means when there's a problem with a part, like a part comes back from you have an issue with your car, you bring your car back to service, they just replace the part, send the parts back to Tesla, Fremont, or whatever they do remanufacturing, like in Lathrop, I think a few miles from Fremont. And then instead of just recycling the part, they repair it and use it back in other cars, which is standard practice in the industry. And nothing to do with a car coming out of the line and having a problem and then having to change something. So that was completely confused by the report. And the report seems to only base that on, not on necessarily on the employees saying anything, but on Tesla adding job listing for remanufacturing. So they made it sound, and they were very vague in the report, they made it sound like Tesla was hiring a bunch of people to do remanufacturing due to the issues that they just stated were happening because of what the employees were saying. But Tesla responded to that, that wasn't true, and they have like a team of 40 people in remanufacturing, which is plenty for them. So
right, and I think CNBC said it was like 170 or something crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Very weird. CNBC feels, it feels like they're sometimes really just out to get Tesla. It's just a very strange media.
And that reporter in particular. So I look into the history of reporting on Tesla, and all our articles about Tesla are negative. Like, just every single one of them are negative. And of course, the problem with CNBC with that is because they are stock market focused. So of course, there's some...
So they move the market when there's a negative report.
When they when they post something, it's directly like related to the stock market. So that's why I'm, on my article on it, I linked it to the stock market directly, because that's what CNBC do. So I want people to make sure that like when something comes out about CNBC, it's directly linked to the stock market. And if you look at the story of... you can look at the trades when the attack, because I'm always concerned about when, because when I post an article, like, we not that we move the market at all, or if we do, it's just, it's benign, but like, I'm done with an article and I post it right away. just what we do, because we're quite limited in staff. We have a copy editor and everything, but it's still quite limited. Like, there's not a lot of editorial oversight at Electrek. So we write something, we kick it around between everyone in the room and just post it. But that's not how it works at CNBC, and they have a bunch of editors and a bunch of people in charge, and they decide when they post and everything like that. So that has a big connotation on the market. Like, you can work with that. And just before they posted the article, when was it? Wednesday or something like that? Well, anyway, when they posted it, it was during market hours, so the market was open. There was a big trade of 200,000 share right before they posted, and sure enough, the stock dropped like 3% in minutes after they posted that article.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that causation is correlation, but...
It feels like causation is correlation.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Anyway, we should break for our sponsor. Wonder is sponsoring us today, and
Wonder Capital.
Wonder Capital. So the best way to invest in solar is generally having your own rooftop solar array. But that doesn't work for everyone, for whatever reasons. Renting instead of a homeowner, bad roof location or configuration, grid electricity already too cheap in your region. In my case, my neighbor had some big trees that, you know, you can't cut down your neighbor's trees. Well, you can, but then the cops get involved, and you don't want that. So, you know, you want to invest even more than just your own electricity savings. Wonder Capital enables you to do that by directly investing in other solar projects with great returns. So small and mid-sized businesses need capital and assistance with solar, and Wonder is supporting them while offering great returns for investors and contributing positively to the helping of the U.S. catch up in solar and fight climate change. So through Wonder, individuals have already financed more than 175 large-scale solar projects. These solar projects create enough electricity to power the equivalent of 5,000 homes, which offset almost 75 million pounds of carbon dioxide emissions every year. Carbon dioxide is very heavy, it seems like. In 2017, Wonder financed over 37 megawatts of solar through more than 115 large-scale projects, which in the first year alone will help offset, for example, 36 million pounds of coal burned or 3.7 millions of gasoline consumed. For greenhouse gas emissions, that amounts to 23.2 million pounds of waste, or in the first year alone, 39,000 acres of U.S. forests in 1 year, or 7,128 cars driven. So we'd love you to visit wondercapital.com/electrek. You know, I think Wonder is a great sponsor for us. We're obviously big into solar, big into green energy. If you know, even if you're somebody like me who has solar panels on your roof and you want to get more into solar, it's a great way to make a little bit of money. If the markets work out the way they hope, you can earn up to 7.5%, which is a great return. You know, who knows what the larger market will do in the coming year. It might be a good investment. Anyway, back to Tesla Model 3.
Well, we try to get sponsors that works with our content, and we think Wonder is a good match here.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
We won't like go with anyone either. But if it works with our content, I think it's good both for us. I'm not gonna lie, we get paid for this, but it works also a lot for our listener, I think.
So but we're not taking sponsorship from the Koch brothers or Shell or any of those fun guys.
No, they find plenty of people to take their money anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what's going back to Model 3, another thing that was interesting this week is that a bunch of Model 3 showed up in Europe on the gray market.
Yeah, it wasn't just like one or two, it was a few, like.
It was a bunch. So the gray market is what we refer to as when a vehicle is not officially available in a certain market, but resellers buy them anyway. Well, they buy them from other market and import them into that specific market where it's not officially available and resell them to the local market. We've seen that with Tesla vehicles before, especially the Model X in China. Model X is crazy popular in China right now and has been since its launch a few years back. But at the beginning of the launch, the production was still limited. So we know the production L of the Model X back in 2015, 2016. So since the supply was limited in China, a bunch of resellers in China ended up buying a ton of cars in the US, bringing them in China and reselling them at a premium. But that came with an issue, of course, with the charging and everything in China, which is not the same as that in the US. But now we're seeing the same thing in Europe, because the Model 3 is not available in Europe until the end of the year, according to Tesla. But a bunch of cars showed up for on the used vehicle sale websites, especially in Germany, where there were five cars for sale. Three of them were already in Germany. Two of them were still in the U.S. at brokers, at auto brokers, but they were listing them in Germany because they are thinking about shipping them there. But a few of them were still in Germany. Maybe they are the same ones that were imported by German automakers to reverse engineer. So I would be careful with those cars if they've been dismantled and everything. So because that was the first car that we knew were coming to Europe, and one of them is the same configuration that we saw going to an automaker there.
Do you think I question that, because like BMW, for instance, or whatever company. You know, they take apart a Tesla. Would they really try to sell it afterwards, or wouldn't they just keep it?
I don't want to come back again to the Mercedes thing, but if you're willing to just rent one and then give it back to the owner, you're certainly willing to buy it and then resell it after it. So I really don't think that's out of the possibilities. But either way, even if those cars are in perfect condition, I don't recommend buying them in Europe. It's just not a good idea. There's just so many issues with them. First,
how are you going to charge it?
Yeah, well, charging it at home is not going to be a big issue because there's adapters, but or you can just install an American home wall charger with the American plug that you can buy pretty easily. But for the supercharger network, there's no solution right now. So you're just forgetting about a big part of the experience of owning a Tesla, which is having access to supercharger network. You can forget about that. And there's also other issues, like of course all the cars come with an internet connection, so you have broadband internet with the car, and those come with a Tesla launching in the market and having a deal with a local mobile service provider. And if Tesla doesn't have that deal for the car yet, then you can fix that with a SIMS card, like you can buy your own SIMS card, but again you're buying it for your own, so that's another value that you lose. And you're already paying like a premium on the car to start with, because the reseller is importing it. I also heard issues with a few people that bought early on the Model S and X. They did the same thing, import them from the US to Europe, and just because they didn't want to wait or something. And those people that have enough money to do that, what they do normally is that as soon as the car becomes available in the European version with the right charging infrastructure, with the internet and all the things that come with it, then they switch car and they buy the new one and just put the one on the other one on the market, on the used market. And then the person that ends up buying that at a discount, think they have a good deal, but then they end up with those issues. And one of those issues has been that for every parts that are specific to that market, Tesla hasn't been very good, apparently, to service those cars. So they've been saying, like, first of all, what is this car doing here? Like, right. why is it here? We didn't know about it. We don't have the part. Our staff is... they've been trained to work on European cars. Like, we don't have any parts for the charging, and the charging is a problem and everything. So it's just a bunch of problems that you just waiting a few months with solve.
And it would be the same. Like, if you try to get a service on an Opel in the U.S., like the Chevy guy or the GM guy would be like, "What are you doing?" Like,
yeah,
we don't have any of this stuff. Like, we don't even know what electric cars do. Like, how are we going to do a European car?
Yeah. So just save yourself a few headaches. And we're going to head the show on a fun one this week. Do you remember a while back, Seth, when Elon mentioned that he wanted to build a drive-in rock and roll restaurant with roller skate waiters and waitresses?
Yeah, but that was just, he was just on Ambien and wine, right?
Yeah, that was definitely one of the tweets that you ask yourself, well, is he kidding with this one, or is it the real one, this one? And most of the time, they are actually real ones. So.
Yeah, I think almost all of them are. Like, yeah. They turn out to be true more often than not.
Sometimes he ends up like just messing with media or something, but this one was real. This week, we found out that Tesla applied for a bunch of permits in Santa Monica. On Santa Monica Boulevard, just a few blocks from the beach. They are going for a small lot that currently has a used car on it, and they want to turn that into, according to the permit application, a Tesla restaurant. So we assume that it's the driving he's talking about, but it's a safe assumption because what's a Tesla restaurant otherwise than that? And it's also in LA, like Elon said. And it's also like the spot makes sense for what he was talking about. And it's also a supercharger. So he said that it would be a restaurant and a supercharger. And the application is also for a supercharger.
Yeah. And so this is like an urban supercharger, right? I mean, it's like in LA urban. But, in that area, obviously, housing is very expensive. A lot of apartments. People parking on the street. So this supercharger is going to be used more like a gas station because, if somebody two blocks away doesn't have a supercharger on the, or a home charger on the street, so they have to charge quickly like gasoline. So theoretically, one day a week, you go get a bite to eat and you fill up your car, and that's how it works now.
Yeah. So... Yeah, because it's definitely not like a standard supercharger for long distance travels, because it's nowhere near an highway, or in LA, nothing is near unless you're like really a staunch from it because of the traffic. But in this case, it's nowhere near any highway.
Although there might be a boring tunnel entrance there.
Yeah, that's a real possibility now. Especially if they can, they have to go through Culver City first, and right. Apparently that's been an issue. But yeah, that what you said makes sense. I think you can definitely build something like that. But like you said, like the urban supercharger right now, so far what they have been is like really for residential areas, and you can leave your car there for a while and come back. In this case here, like since it's a restaurant, are they gonna prioritize people that are coming in to charge and eat, or can you just leave your car there and forget about it for a while until it charge and come back? Or so we don't know anything about that yet, because it's actually it's a very first of its kind in terms of supercharger. The only thing that maybe resembled it a little bit is the Kittleman City one between Los Angeles and San Francisco, where Tesla is also a coffee shop in what they're calling a Tesla Lounge for owners. Something quite similar with this one, but really more of a restaurant. And it's going to be interesting to see what Tesla's involvement with the restaurant business.
Yeah, what are they going to serve there? Is it going to be just like maybe Elon's brother?
Yeah, Kim Ball is a restaurator, so
yeah,
he could certainly be involved in this. And he's on Tesla's board.
Yep, I see so, it. I see the connection.
Yeah, but even then, even maybe if, like... he can advise for the creation of the thing. Like, Tesla is really getting into the restaurant business, or is just like they're gonna let a third party take over the restaurant while the I think they need to be pretty involved if they want to do the whole thing, like Elon said, with having the menu pop up on the center display once you park, and then you can order from there. So they have to be pretty involved.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's going to really help the neighborhood, because you got a bunch of Tesla owners with 30 minutes of time. Like, I feel like that would be a good place to put a Whole Foods or a, you know, a nail. I guess there's probably 10 nail salons there already, but I'm just looking around the neighborhood now, yeah. And it doesn't seem like there's much in the way of
The lots itself stuff. Will only work for like a very small building where no one can get in. And like you said, it's a roller skate thing. It's a they call that the car hops, uh-huh. Instead of waiters, the car hops, and you order from your car and they're gonna bring you everything. But yeah, it could be more than just like food to eat directly at the place. It could be like a little convenience store, and you can have the menu, everything in the store on the screen and order from there. It's possible.
There's a restaurant across the street as well. Another car dealer is down the street. Oh, there's an adult bookshop. That's going to be helpful. Do all your shopping, adult gifts. There's a Miller's, I don't know, locks and keys, so you can get your locks taken care of.
There's plenty of amenities around, that's for sure.
Vacuum, sewing. There's a Chevron station across the way. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah, that's not gonna be really useful for just loaners, but
no.
If you need some gas for your lawnmower or something,
yeah.
Though you should still go electric with your lawnmower too.
Yeah. So. What are you doing?
yeah. What are you still doing with the gas for your lawnmower? Anyway, that's pretty much it, guys, for this week's episode. Thanks a lot for all our listeners and especially our Patreon supporters. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/electrek, and we appreciate your support a lot.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.